Thank you very much indeed. Well, that's the authoritative version about where we are and what the Commission and all the rest of us now having to work with the legislation and the system are trying to do. I should have said at the beginning, just housekeeping points. If we need to get out in a hurry, those of you up there, go that way. Those of you down here, go that way, because it's slightly quicker. And we all meet up outside. We will produce a note of the conference, which will be on our website, hopefully next week. Certainly my speech will be available on the website. There will also be a policy document available reasonably soon, published by the Foundation for Law, Justice and Society. This conference is co-sponsored by the Centre for Society and Legal Studies, where we work, and the Foundation for Law, Justice and Society, which is also associated with Wolfson College. And the foundation is funded by a number of wonderful people who are interested in explaining law and society to a wider group, and has an extremely wide global list. So this policy document will go around the globe. Now, I knew absolutely nothing about ADR until about 3 years ago, with the exception that after 25 years of being a commercial litigation lawyer in the City of London, Lord Wolfe completely changed the UK civil procedure and introduced mediation in his reports of 1995-1996, in the civil procedure rules in England and Wales 1998-99. And I thought, what's mediation? So I got mediation training. And I suddenly thought, hey, this is a brilliant way of solving an awful lot of disputes for the sort of reasons Jackie's spoken about. And at that point, I left and became an academic. So therefore, almost 10 years later, we suddenly thought that the consumer ADR was interesting. So we spent 2 years with Iris Benner, who's here, Naomi Creutzfeldt, various other colleagues, Stefan Foote, who's also here from Belgium, Franziska Weber from Germany, strike Netherlands, Magdalena Tilibatska from Poland, going around 10 countries asking ADR bodies what they do. And as most of you know, the answers are in this book. Plug book, but most of you, I think, have seen it or know about it. We've got another 5 or 6 countries ready for the next volume, almost ready for the next volume, and we'll do some more as soon as we've got time, although they may have changed by then. But what we found was immensely exciting, because when you look at all the different systems, you see how they operate, and you see what a good job either they are doing or they could do. And you also see enormous diversity, at which point you start scratching your head and wondering about where we go next. And what I'm going to say is based on the experience of looking at ADR in the context of what's on the ground. You've really got to know what is on the ground and how it works before one starts pontificating about it, because it's a different world. It seems to me that one needs to have a vision for where we might go and what we might do with this and all these new techniques. And I just want to talk with a slight overlap, but with no apology, from what Jackie talked about, to 4 specific things where I think ADR can do terrific things. Now, I tend to use the acronym CDR because I think consumer dispute resolution is its own world. let's not have a debate about the difference between the two, because it is, if you like, academic. But I'm going to use CDR, and that can be interchangeable with ADR for the next 2 days at least. From the point of view of looking at resolving disputes, improving access to justice, claims values are low, consumers' attitudes to cost proportionality, and I'll put up some figures about these things in a minute. How much does it cost for consumers? How long does it take? And is it user-friendly and accessible? It can hit all those buttons if CDR is designed and operated properly. It can also provide consumers with advice, information, education, underpin informed purchasing, and of course work as a filter for the people who just won't go away when they should, as has been mentioned. Enabling the ADR system, CDR system, to deliver regulatory outputs in relation to the market gets me very excited indeed. So there's the interrelationship with regulators and markets and information. And in particular, responding to what's out there. What do people who want to buy need if they've got a problem? And what do they want to buy? It can tell you that as well. So looking therefore at some of the detail and the statistics on this, the basic proposition, if we go through these four things, improving access to justice first. Consumers find lawyers, litigation, courts difficult to access, costly and slow. I say that as a lawyer, and it's embarrassing to have to say that, but it's true, and lawyers need to face up to that. Many of the considerations are very low value. Now, these pictures may be difficult to read, but quite a number of them should be familiar. The 2000 consumer survey found, as Jackie said, that 21% out of 65,000 interviews had encountered a problem with a goods, service, or retailer or provider in the previous 12 months for which they had a legitimate cause to complain. So it wasn't rubbish, there was something there. More than three quarters took action in some form of response. That's 77%. But we need to be worried about the 22% who didn't do anything. Those who took action were most likely to have made a complaint to the retailer. And that's good, because that's where it ought to start. That's about 65%. 16% to the local authority, 13% to the manufacturer, only 5% to the ADR body, and 2% to the court. So ADR is doing better than courts, but both are pretty low on those very general aggregated figures. The most frequently cited reason for not making a complaint was that they'd already got a satisfactory outcome from the provider. That's good. That's 40%. But if you tot up the other ones, you get to 67% of people saying the amount involved was too small or it was too difficult, basically. So that's not good. This is an unresponsive legal system, in effect. When you ask people why they didn't do it, why they didn't go to court at any rate, hang on, have I got the right picture? Why people didn't go to an ADR body. The figures are similar to courts, but I think I have got a picture missing. Yes, that's the court picture, isn't it? So you'd already reached a satisfactory response, 40%, and there's 67% that didn't do anything about it in many of the other bit examples. When you look at ADRs, the picture is slightly better, but still not brilliant, because you've got a significant amount with most of the middle bars, with people saying it's all too difficult still. So that's not good. So therefore, one purpose behind this is the next few minutes of what I'm going to say is ADRs better than courts, and we need to make that clear. But CDRs should not be complacent, because you've got to hit better targets. Basically. And not enough people know how good you are overall. And if there are broad statistics that come out that are dragged down by some of you, then that's not good for everyone else. Moving on, looking at CDR from the business perspective in the Commission's 2009 report, so a bit out of date, only 8% of retailers had used ADR mechanisms to settle disputes in the previous 2 years. So how can we improve it? Now, of course, that's a different picture from country to country and sector to sector. But it is interesting that 3/4 of the retailers who'd used CDR mechanisms in the previous two years said it had been a successful outcome. Not that they'd won, but it had worked. So high level of satisfaction with the process. How much does it cost? Sorry. How much claims are involved? How much money's involved? In our study, we found that there's typical claims data for 2010. In France, the FFSA Mediateur handled cases that were valued at around 100 euros, some as low as 5 euros. Average award from the Energy Mediateur was 373 euros. In Spain, the average for the arbitration system seems to be around 366 euros. UK Communications Ombudsman average award was about 198 pounds. Interestingly, the average claim was much higher at 587. Wonder why that is. Germany, 86% of the claims to the insurance ombudsman were under 5,000 and 90% were under 10,000. Normal claim to the transport ombudsman in Germany, SERP, was between 10 and 200. Netherlands, the Geschillencommissie cases varied between sectors, 206 for taxis. Quite a long taxi ride, that, but anyway. 5,980 euros for housing guarantees, and so on. So EU figures estimated average and average value of consumer losses at 375, but a median of 18. An awful lot of very small cases. Variation between different types, and these are UK figures just to illustrate this. So I mentioned an insurance figure earlier. The insurance problems are more expensive, generally speaking. They involve products that give rise to more of a problem. So not surprisingly, on these figures, they were at the top. And you can see them going down to, well, you know, if you go out to buy a burger and fries, £8. Something like that. But you see a gradation, so it's important to look at cost proportionality and not aggregate too much. But the policy conclusion is if there are many claims that have values of these sort of low levels, dispute resolution processes have to be able to deal with them. And if we're saying courts are not good enough, what else? And if CDR costs are going to be too high, we're not going to deal with the problem. What, therefore, are consumers' attitudes to cost proportionality? This is the most complex slide we put up, and you won't attempt to be able to see it. But you can go to the website and look it all up. The 2007 Lurven report, splendid report led by Professor Stuck and Terry and colleagues, that was part of the preparing the ground process that Jackie referred to, said that rationally, as I think as you quoted the figure, rationally consumers would only be used to go to court if a claim was over 500 euros. The Commission's 2011 survey, which this is, found that the level of financial loss that would cause people to go to court by a majority of people was between 101 and 2,500. So quite big bands being asked about here. And there are national variations, which is this picture. Around a fifth of those in Greece,
26%, Estonia 21%, Bulgaria 22%, Austria 19%, maintained they would never take a business to court, no matter how high the financial loss. Forget it. Well, you can understand that in countries like Italy because the court process is clogged and it takes years. But you can see variations in the approaches. Another interesting point, socio-demographic analysis. The most reluctant respondents, widowed respondents came highest. 17% said they'd never do anything. Those who never used a computer, 15%. And then, you know, the elderly or quite young. So, interesting point there. If you ask people to fill in a claim form or go through a court-based procedure, they won't do it. They don't want to do it. So how can you capture what they want to do? How can you capture their problem? What is the cost? Well, it's well established that court procedures involve some cost. There's a court fee and there's the lawyer's fee. European small claims procedure applies to claims under 2,000 and was intended to simplify and speed up litigation. It's got standard forms, it's got a process, it's got a loser pays rule. Immediately, you run into a problem that people will not want to take the risk for a small amount of money. Some national small claims procedures don't have a loser pays rule, but even so, what are you going to spend in order to get things back? Now, this is the 2012 ECNet survey on the small claims procedure, European small claims procedure. And it's free to consumers in 76% of member states, but not in 24%. Court fees ranged from €15 to about €200. Why on earth would you spend a court fee of €200 if the claim is less or even more? We're not capturing in that procedure an awful lot of claims that should be dealt with and sorted out. On top of that, you may have to pay lawyers, even though you're not required to. And in many countries, people would automatically default to going to a lawyer, and at that point the clock starts ticking. So the cost rationality, as an economist would say, rational apathy takes place, and you just say this is too difficult. Now in our study, we found that most of the CDR systems across Europe are free to consumers, and if they're not free, they're going in that direction. There are some that include a cost, especially those that are arbitration-based, and there are some where there is good reason for including a modest cost in order to get the consumer actually to focus and become slightly more rational on how much the cost is, because some people can get very annoyed with a bad holiday or a funeral problem and claim highly inflated, unrealistic amounts. And when you say, let's have a barrier to entry, in effect, it produces much more rational behaviour. So personally, I wouldn't advocate doing away with it. And indeed, the directive says free or nominal. But I think it's difficult to come out with a one size fits all. But broadly speaking, unless it's free, we're not going to capture all these problems. The cross-border claiming system, if you go through courts or even the European Small Claims Procedure, involves going through two legal systems. Even with the abolition of ex aequatur from January 2015, you've got a procedure that involves a certain amount of time and effort and expense. How long do cases take? We found in our study that these figures, and these are in terms of days. Hang on.
Yeah.
Sorry, that picture first. This is CEPEJ data. That's the Council of Europe. And these are the, there are two figures. It's the upper one, the one needs to look at, I think it's the blue line. Those are litigation cases. The other one are court cases that are not litigation, which is like sort of property transactions or whatever. Bit confusing. But the point of this is that to say that on these figures, a court case, an average court case, and this is all sorts of sizes, so it's very difficult to generalise, but in Lithuania, it takes 55 days. They've obviously got an amazing court. Czech Republic, 128. Germany, with its terrifically efficient court system, 184 days. Italy, 493. I don't believe that figure, it's years. Malta scores the biggest down the bottom, 849. In other words, all courts take a long time. Now, compared to that, these are what we found in terms of months. And you can see, we tried to put down, say, telecoms in the second column, insurance, banking, whatever. They're pretty low. It's 2 or 3 months as an average. Pensions or similar types of insurance problems take longer, as you would expect. But already one sees a differential from the last slide to this one, that CDR systems are much quicker, and therefore they're going to be less costly. Last point on this section, user friendliness. How much hassle is it? If you've got a case of 30, 40, 50, 200 euros, how much hassle? These days people are busy. Increasingly, they will use the internet. Will they want to go along to a lawyer, fill in a form? Can you just go to a computer and do something online? Well, money claims online are going very well, and the numbers are increasing. So the courts, as it were, systems have got that right. And increasingly, we found a lot of CDR systems that are using IT, and indeed some even ban using the phone because it's cheaper and quicker, in fact. But many people actually want either to talk to people or to do things online. And as soon as that stage, you realise that things will move very quickly. Indeed, you can, of course, have an ODR portal. And, whoops, wrong way. And the Belgians were very quickly out on their own, in front, by creating Belmed. Unfortunately, there aren't quite enough CDR sectors below it, but it's a terrific idea that's being populated. So there's a national portal that will fit in the pyramid that Jackie talked about. So if the systems are designed properly, CDR is clearly better than courts, even small claims. Personally, I would ditch the small claims directive. I think it's a waste of time and money. But I don't expect you to agree that. because I think this is better and this works. Money claims online, yes, no problem. So one starts to look at a differentiation for what type of technique do you want for different types of cases, both as between courts, money claims, consumer claims, or different types of consumer claims. And I think that is the way forward in relation to harmonisation of civil procedure, which is now arising again as an issue. So if these systems are designed effectively, CDR can offer very clear advantages in terms of speed, accessibility, informality, expertise, lower cost to the state and to the users, increased acceptability of decisions, and potentially lower regulatory burden and increased motivation. So all in all, it could be a good thing. The second issue I mentioned was providing consumer advice and underpinning informed purchasing. every CDR body receives more contacts, inquiries, than it resolves. Quite a lot of them are just requests for information. You could go to a national consumer advice source. There's a hugely interesting and valuable function here about advice. And it's rather like going to a lawyer or going to a consumer's advice or going to a regulator, saying, this has happened, can you tell me if I've got a complaint or not? I don't like it, it smells fishy. What do you think? Now, that is a different process from saying, I want to start a legal claim. It's an advice function, it's very simple. And one should never imagine that just because you get an awful lot of contacts, it's a waste of time and money. It isn't, because the advice function is enormous. It educates people. They don't know, I wouldn't know, what all the details of financial services or telecoms regulation are. And on occasions I've been to consumer complaints functions in-house to say, look, this has happened, is it a problem? So this, I'll call later triage function, an advice function, is immensely important. In Sweden, as explained to me by Jolanta, there are these two systems that are side by side. So the ADR system's on the right with the ARN at the top. But on the left, there's a very similar information system in the country with the consumer agency and a load of sectoral expert bodies below that, like financial services and telecoms and energy and the rest of it, and a big body of local citizens' advice. And as a result, the number of complaints that start on the right-hand side does seem to be low. So the ARN only gets about 11,000 complaints for the entire country for a year. Now, I can't prove that comparatively, but it does seem to me to be remarkably low. And one important reason seems to be because a lot of things get dealt with on the left, including pre-purchase advice. So education and advice systems here are very, very important. And as I've said, the right-hand side can do the left-hand side's function as well. So investment in those is good. Regulatory issues. A major potential advantage of CDR lies in its ability to affect and improve market behaviour. CDR entities should feed back aggregated market information to inform regulators, customers, and the market. They should aim to identify problems at an early stage and for corrective action to be taken swiftly. The history of payment protection insurance in this country is an outstanding example. These data might be slightly out of date now, but say 500,000 cases brought to the financial ombudsman, many more to banks, total paid out on mis-selling between January 2011 and 2013 was £8 billion. And there's a huge raft of cases. Now, if we had had the system, which actually we've now got, that the ombudsman could have spotted that earlier, and actually did in this case, but they couldn't do a great deal about it. They've got to be enabled to share the information, to publish it. The financial ombudsman here, about 3 years ago, started to publish, as many others did, aggregated data saying these traders, these problems, these numbers overall. And I don't think I'm letting any secrets out of the bag. The story goes that this information was a big shock. It was picked up in the press. Every single newspaper ran it. And therefore, for the first time ever, the consumer complaints issues and consumer complaint handling system and the nature of these problems got onto the main board agendas of the big four retail banks. And it was seen that out of all the thousands of financial services entities in the UK, all the consumer problems were about the four retailers, surprise, surprise. But we've now proved it, and the numbers were extraordinary. So then they had to do something about it. Simple transparency at work. That has to be coupled with the ability then of the regulator to go in and say, we've identified a problem, an emerging issue, you're going to stop it, you're going to fix the issue, you're going to change what you're doing, there might be various regulatory consequences, enforcement consequences, and you're going to pay everyone back. All that is now happening through various bits of legislation and change, fundamental changes to the enforcement policies and powers of many, many UK regulatory bodies, not just financial services from 2010 legislation, but going through to energy and others. So that regulators are now sitting on people and saying, just found a problem, you're going to pay people back. And there are various other ways within which it's very powerful, because you put it together with enforcement powers and you can deal with public and private aspects all at one go. Highly effective, highly efficient, very swift. Under the financial services arrangements in the UK, one can impose a scheme. Some can be dealt with, therefore, because you've got the power as a regulator, it will be dealt with by agreement, and any disputes under the scheme can go to the Ombudsman. You don't need courts, you don't need class actions. They take years, cost a lot of money. This is very effective. So therefore, the involvement of CDR with regulators in an integrated system can be amazingly powerful. That moves on to responding to consumer issues. These are complaints from the ECC 2012 report. They had 72,000 inquiries, out of which there were 32,000 complaints. Sectoral breakdown is relevant, so therefore about 60% concerned e-commerce. So that's going towards digital agenda, which is good. But if you look at it split by sectors, transport comes out first, and especially airlines. So we've got to fix airlines. They attracted about a third of all the complaints, or transport generally. I don't see too many transport ADRs so far, Germany being a strong exception, and they, as I hope Christoph will say tomorrow, are expanding considerably quickly into covering airlines. One can see these numbers of ECCs going up over some years steadily as people get more familiar with ECCs themselves. And again, you see the split between contacts and actual complaints and requests for information. What are people complaining about, and what sectors, therefore, should be priorities to deal with? Well, these are the 2013 Consumer Scoreboard Commission figures. Most of them are very, very simple things. Non-delivery, products defective, rescission of contract supplementary charges. Differences across countries. Most people are confident in buying in Ireland, Denmark, UK and Luxembourg. Much lower numbers in other countries. And this builds into consumer trust, which varies therefore from country to country. You can see between the top and the bottom quite a big variation in consumer trust. 60% of the complaints 2012 registered by the ECCs related to online purchases. And Jackie said, you don't know where you're buying from and you don't actually care, but the system has to work and the dispute system has to work. So it has to be pan-European and cheap and accessible. So therefore, summing up this section, if we get ADR right,
It can be more attractive and cheaper than courts. We will capture more problems. We will resolve them. You'll have more confident and happy consumers. You ought to have happier business as well. And they'll get a lot of information out of this. They will know that a level playing field is being dealt with because they know that there's horizontal enforcement. The people who should get nailed but aren't will be, because the regulators will have the information to do that. Why is there not to like in here? What is there not to like? Now, having set out that great vision, how do we achieve all that? Well, most of that's for tomorrow, but the main objectives, it seems to me that there is behind this the ability to look at defining the legal system afresh, and I won't go into this in enormous detail, but there are lots of academic arguments between public and private enforcement and which works best. And if you're in America, you use private enforcement, private attorneys general, in order to enforce public law through class actions or private litigation. And then you need a lot of incentives, a no loser pays rule, contingency fees, punitive damages, triple damages and antitrust, etc., etc., in order to incentivize people to do that. That leads to a lot of litigation. And there's a cultural point that Jackie mentioned right at the beginning. Everyone is trying to sue everyone else. Huge generalization, but that's the approach. There are other ways of doing it. And the other way is in the middle, and a combination, from what I've just been saying, of actually ADR and public regulation. That seems to me to be the European model we need to look at, because it can work. So I actually think that if we get this right, consumer to business ADR will be central, and that regulatory oversight of compensation will also be normal as part of the enforcement process, and that the courts and lawyers will have a residual place. These are the Commission's objectives, so I won't repeat those. There are, of course, variations across Europe, so we need to worry about how we're going to get uniform application. And I entirely agree with the point of the Commission's policy that one size does not fit all. It's just impossible. We learnt that by the time we've been to two or three countries. You can't possibly harmonise by having a model for ADR for every country. You've got to build on what you've got and improve them. In my view, many countries have got a good system, but every single one could actually improve. And some of them might well need or benefit from actually starting again and thinking about quite significant reform. If you want details, I won't say that in public, but talk privately. So how do we do it? Well, the Commission set out these principles. Won't go into detail, I imagine that's pretty well understood. But what I'm hearing in the academic community is a backlash. And to be honest, a lot of this comes from German professors of civil procedure. Now, German because a lot of academics have only just woken up to the fact, or even haven't woken up yet, that ADR is here. But Germany, of course, has a very good civil justice system. It's got a very good, very efficient court system. But even so, it's too expensive and it doesn't capture small consumer complaints. But there are now academic articles beginning to appear saying all this is unconstitutional, it blocks access to the courts, this is privatised justice, how on earth do we know that it's okay? It's sort of, it's not exactly American bounty hunters, but we can't trust these people, who are they? They will make inconsistent decisions, but individually and within countries and across Europe. They're not just, they don't know what they're doing. There will be the added expense of the regulatory system sitting on top of all the ADR bodies. Some business sectors will also say, we don't need it because we handle everything in-house. Why do we want to pay for anything else? Now, this being an academic institution, I'm going to set you some homework. Please think about the answers to those, because these points can't be ignored. I think there are some very good answers. And I've written quite a lot in my paper, but I'm not going to read it out. I think we might challenge you to come back and think about those tomorrow with your answers. Okay. What do we do? Now, I think that there is actually an evolution of models here over time. Because if you look at the earliest ADR systems, one builds it up from court procedure. You then move into arbitration. That isn't a terribly big jump, and arbitration as a concept is very widely known. Obviously, hugely used in the commercial community and international arbitration. Many of the consumer disputes are based on arbitration. Proposition. Is arbitration out of date as a system? I don't say as a technique. I say as a system for consumer ADR.
Because
it's 40 years old, and there are more recent ones, like Ombudsman. Now, one problem here is number three, which has come in, which is, frankly, the French problem, because many of them say in-house médiateurs are all you need. And that led to various changes introduced into the directive. In my view, in-house médiateurs are fine if they're part of the in-house complaint system. Any sensible retailer has an effective in-house complaint customer care system. Some of them, we've written about a couple in the book, are really very impressive indeed. And the people who run them are incredibly enthusiastic about wanting to capture every single piece of information about all their customers, everywhere, good or bad, because they want to know what they've got to fix or how they can improve or what new products they can bring out. But quite a few others don't do that. And that system has got to be very effective, but brief. And all the best people say, we'll capture as much as possible, but if people want to go elsewhere, actually the best thing is to go outside. Some of the French médiateur systems are designed positively to stop consumers complaining. You've got to go through several hierarchical approaches, and then quite often you get pushed down again. Having hit the top, you bounce off, which is no use at all, and there are very small levels of complaints that are actually made with. It's almost scandalous, quite frankly. You need someone external. There are only a couple of external ombudsmen in France, sectoral ombudsmen in France. I'm delighted to see the energy one here. So France has got a mental problem about how it does this, and I think we need to talk about that rather loudly. That this system is actually not independent. And therefore, it won't be trusted, even if it's claimed that it's impartial. Okay, that's the end of that rant. Techniques. The most sophisticated systems use these, a lot of pyramids in this area, use these techniques. Direct contact with the trader. Then you go to the third party. So there's an information or triage system. Talked about the functions of that. Have I got a problem? It's an advice function. It's you. At that point, you see all the best people are able to solve things incredibly quickly. In the report, the most recent annual report of the UK Ombudsman Services, there's a little case history saying someone rang us at, I think it was 2:50 p.m. and we'd fixed it by 3:17.
It was done through a couple of phone calls. We now, admittedly, in that sector, there aren't too many traders, and they know who they are, and the traders know the ombudsman. But it was a very simple issue, and it was capable of being solved very quickly. Some would take a bit longer, but you can have very quick procedures. Why do you want to go through an old-fashioned 19th century civil procedure style or arbitration style process to solve something that's very simple? Has an impact on cost. So at that stage, the best people would say to the consumer, we've looked at your thing, it isn't a problem. And quite a few consumers would say, thank you very much, because they just want to talk to another person, get it off their chest, get an independent view. Equally, at that stage, the ADR can turn to the trader and say, you really messed up, you've got to fix this now. And quite a few do that. So that stage is quite important, but it costs money. There is quite a lot of money if you've got quite a lot of contacts at that stage. And in the paper, we've got some statistics comparing one or two different systems. And I can see systems that don't have that, and it sort of morphs into the next mediation conciliation phase, which is slightly more formal about talking to both sides and getting the position together. If you don't have that stage, but you just go straight to arbitration, you can keep your costs very low. But on the other hand, you might be missing solving an awful lot of things very quickly. The top level is, in fact, a decision. It may, of course, be binding or non-binding. Now, I think that we're in a trajectory here over time as to what the end result might be in 5 or 10 years when the directive is amended. And I don't get worried about the fact that things are not binding in quite a few systems at the moment, because I think one needs to build the system, build confidence in the system, which is possible, and then think about whether things should be binding. The solution to that might be in revising Article 6 of the Human Rights Convention, which is almost a heretical thing to suggest, but that could be the easy answer at that stage. A number of systems simply have the two, as I said. So you save a lot of money. However, one question, is arbitration too expensive? Is it too old-fashioned? If you've got a panel of three, okay, they might meet quite regularly, but you've got three people. You've got the documentation to put before three people. There is a cost within that. Is that too much in relation to the figures we were looking at earlier on? Should you have, as the ombudsman systems have, case handlers who will filter things? And cases just going up. Now, I looked at UK financial ombudsman statistics. They've got three and a half thousand staff. That's enormous. And of course, the cost is pretty big. All levied on the banks and therefore on the rest of us. Just at the minute, they get over 2 million contacts a year, which turns into 500,000 new cases, it did in the last 2012-13. And then you see the pyramid effect. 198,000 were resolved by adjudicators through mediation, recommended settlements and adjudications. And only 24,000 went on up to the top level of being resolved by an ombudsman. So there's sort of inbuilt escalation and, if you like, appeal mechanism within the system. Now, that's quite sophisticated, and there's the cost element. But one starts to think about quite difficult trade-offs, but they come from what's the level of demand, what's the level of demand in country, on what's the level of demand in a sector and particular types of problems. How can you resolve these things most quickly? Final aspects on which I want to share some thoughts National systems. Some people are starting from scratch. Do you build a single integrated national ADR system? Well, I had a discussion in the Czech Republic with a regulator. Let's call him a telecom regulator. And he said, I've just looked at this directive. This is very interesting. I think I should create an ADR in the agency. And I said, well, you could. Do you want to pay for it? Not so sure. Well, why don't you talk to the telecom companies? Did I say energy or telecom? Talk to the companies in the sector. Get them to pay for it. Right. What about the regulator next door to you? So your telecoms, what about energy? What about utilities? What about consumer financial services? Oh, so are they all going to end up with their own individual sectoral ADRs? They could. They might actually achieve economies of scale if they put them together. That's an awful lot of talking to do, but it's a very good idea. So you've got to talk to the government and you've got to talk to all the sectors and all the regulators and all the trade bodies in order to get everything together. But you'll actually end up with quite an integrated system. If the government wants to create a single national ADR consumer body, who's going to pay for it and on what basis? Will you have enough expertise? Because we know financial services and telecoms and utilities and energy are all quite complex, and you've got to have expertise within that. Different models. This is the Nordic model, pretty much the same in Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Norway. So you've got a residual body in place, like the ARN in Sweden, but underneath it, and that's paid for by the state, basically, in those countries. Underneath it, you've got a number of sectoral ones, financial services, telecoms, etc., which are paid for by the sectors individually. And in those countries, that seems to me to be a really good working model. You don't need, therefore, to bring in anything new specifically in order to conform to the directive. Netherlands has got a terrific model. Unfortunately, virtually no one else has got the same model. You've got a lot of sectors, and I think you told me last week, 53 sectors at the minute, but rising. And the great, and also the financial services with KFID is the same sort of thing, albeit with an ombudsman involved as well, in a slightly different, well, it's an adjacent administration. So you regard it as being off one side. But the point is, the administration for all these 53 is the same for the entire country and for every single sectoral body. Therefore, you have got consistency. You've got incredibly low running costs. You've got 45 staff, and they all operate the same system. So huge transparency, huge simplicity that the consumer can say, I know what these are, they all operate the same. And you can account for variations. Now, some ombudsman systems have got exactly that sort of in-house, as it were. But this is a national system. That's a great system. The disadvantage is all the talking. It's taken 40 years to get to 53 sectors. What do they do about full coverage? Well, the obvious thing, if I may say, is to, and this is not inside information, this is just flying a kite, is you just have an extra box on the side, which is the residual one. You could have a separate national residual one, but it makes much more sense to bolt it onto the existing system that everyone's familiar with. Who pays for that? Because all these boxes are paid for by individual sectors. Well, who pays for the extra one? Answer, bring in a power to charge or to collect a deposit in advance. So the law could say the ADR body could charge a trader. Maybe difficult in some countries at the moment. But if you say you've got to give me a deposit before we actually process a case, that ought to work. Be interested to hear any more developments from the Netherlands tomorrow. Other model, you've got a whole load of sectors that are not joined up. This is the UK. Germany is similar, but there are fewer vertical ones so far. Sort of insurance and transport are out in front. In the UK, we've had quite a few years of a whole load of, we've got a lot of ADR coverage of different types. Some statutory ombudsman, some private ombudsman, some private ADR systems. And operationally, in my view, they're all very good. But they're not joined up. And what do we do in order to have full coverage? It seems to me that one has to look at things from the consumer perspective and start off with simplicity and understandability. So if you think, what do you do if you've got a legal complaint? Answer, go to a lawyer and go to court. We've got to change that thinking. What do you do if you've got a problem with a trader? Go to an ADR. You've got to know that the ADR is there, and you've got to know it's simple, and you've got to know that it's more or less the same system, not only in the country but everywhere else. So diversity of approach, operational approach and architecture really doesn't help. Therefore, one option is forcibly to join all these into one. So you get back to the single pyramid. However, one or two countries are toying with that idea and running into problems. So the Belgian minister said, we're going to have one, you're all going to join up. And they said, no. That one is to be resolved, but it doesn't look very helpful. And you then get a turf war between all these people saying, this is my bit and I'm going to keep it. Well, that is not helpful from the consumer perspective or from the business perspective. One should remember who one's customers are. And that is people on the street and businesses. And they don't want systems like this. They want them to work. Now, when I say that, it seems to me that operational effectiveness is actually more important, though, than legal structures. The example was suggested, if you ring 999, or 911 if you're in America, you don't care which service you're being put through to, or where it is, which fire brigade, which police, which ambulance, you just want one of them. So operationally, behind the curtain, behind the portal, if you like, it doesn't matter how many legal structures there are. As long as there aren't too many to make the whole thing unwieldy and not operating together. But you want the interoperability. So joining up to have similar systems, at least nationally, seems to me to be rather a good idea. And we should learn that from the Nordics and the Netherlands, definitely. This gets difficult because certainly in the UK, the issue of should we bring in healthcare and how do you do that, and should we bring in public problems and how do you do that, is now on the agenda, which rather complicates things because it's just a bigger picture. And I think that we should, but we need to almost go back to a blank sheet of paper in saying, how do we get from here to there? A slight aside, I believe the answer to most healthcare things is to do with compensation schemes, which again, the Nordics and the French ONIAM scheme are the leaders. And we're involved in discussions with the UK Department of Health to try and develop compensation schemes. And that's the ADR equivalent in relation to personal injury type problems. Although certainly in the Netherlands, the Geschillenkommissie are able to deal with those and are moving into health similarly in a big way. Those are some ideas. We've got a session on this tomorrow where we can chew over some of these points. Summing up, simplicity, I think the three-tier model is very important. Traders have got to be encouraged and not forgotten in all the discussion about ADR bodies. They have to be encouraged to have very good, very effective customer complaint handling systems, but you don't leave problems with them for too long. And the UK telecom system, for example, has learned a lot from that over the years about having cut-off times for how long you leave complaints in companies. A seamless service for CDR systems, whatever the structure is, with some residual function. And it seems to me that sectoral expertise is very important. But one can therefore get that to be funded by business really quite easily and voluntarily if one has the right conversations with the right companies at the right time. Enforcers are going to be really, really important in relation to joining these things together. So I believe that CDR is a very, very good thing if it's designed and operated properly. And it's good for just about everyone. But we need to make it work, and we hope in this conference to contribute to that, those discussions. There are enormous possibilities in relation to design of systems, and we've got to get those decisions right now, because this is a big opportunity to rethink. So turf wars really don't help. Let's think outside the box and try and pull things together. Thank you.